Now, as I've already told you, I don't intend to read every word of the Maamar with you inside, because if I did that, I'd be on page base, which would be in nobody's interest. So I'm speaking in Yonim, right? So in the last two shiurim of last week, what we discussed was, first of all, the Moshel of Tipa. That was the shiur of Monday, or Tuesday, whatever it was. And then Thursday's shiur was the Moshel of Dibur. And in both cases, the idea is that there's a Mashpia and a Makabel, and that when the Makabel gets from the Mashpia, the Makabel reveals a Koyach that's even greater than the Mashpia, and he gives back to the Mashpia more than the Makabel gave him, right? In the Moshel of Tipa, the Tipa is planted in the Makabel, in the Nukva, in the earth, in the Makabel, and the Koyach, Ein Sof, the power of procreation of Yeshmeyayin, is in the Nukva. And then the same was true also in the Moshel of Dibur, that ideas are communicated through words. Words are a inevitable, invariable symptom. They limit the ideas. Yet, there's this ironic phenomenon, there's a strange thing that when you put things into words, there is an advantage. And of course, this is really in the old-fashioned language, Lashon Chazal, the idea of mitalmida yaseh mikulam. And I relate to it. Mitalmida yaseh mikulam means that when you're forced to bring something down, put things into words, you gain a certain klarkeit, a certain clarity that you would not have otherwise. Now, Rabbi Yisai, the shiur officially begins today on the bottom of page Vav. I'm going to read a few shiuris. I'm not going to read a lot. I just want to sort of speak, open up the shiur by reading some text. And we're beginning, the beginning of the line of Bira Inyim, which I believe is seven lines from the bottom of the page. So far, we've had two illustrations for this issue of Kais, of how the Makabel is Makabel, Reb Shmuel. He gives back. You're writing? What are you doing over there? The first we had the Mashal of Tipa and the Nukva, and then we had the Mashal of Ideas and Dibur. The third Mashal is Oires and Kalim. That when you put lights into Kalim, Kalim are naturally lower than Oir, but by putting lights into Kalim, you gain an advantage of a Koyach Kodum. We're also going to have in this context the Mashal of Neshama and Guf. How that when the neshama goes into the guf, there's the ma'ilas ha-guf that in its chayrish exceeds and precedes the ma'ilas ha-neshama. So we're going to have really, in this ma'ilas, four neshamas. Tipa and the nukva, the tipa and the makabel. Ideas, sechel and dibur. Oires and kelim, and the neshama and guf. And in each of these cases, the makabel is doing more for the mashpia than the mashpia is doing for the makabel. Even though the Mashpia is giving, the Makabel is receiving, but the Makabel is not just a physical glass that you fill and empty, but the Makabel takes and gives. So let's read a few shuris inside the Nemel Shmuz. To explain the mashal of Seichel and Dibur, says the Rebbe, I'll give you another example. The Nilacheda Yipol, if you wanted to be honest, you would wonder about Kol Inyan Hamshacha Sa'ed of Yidigas, the whole notion of Hamshacha Sa'ed, of light coming down, drawn down and descending, the fact that it goes down and it comes, and this is the next word, is the very critical word, to shine and be revealed, in the vessels. You have to understand, there's no mokum lamaila, there's no such thing as space, and therefore the significance of descending and ascending is not spatial. It's not, it was here, now it's here. There's no here, there's no there, it's all the same. Descent would mean to manifest on a lower level of awareness. It would reveal itself to a lower dimension. To radiate in the vessels of the letter, which is contrary to the nature. Why? It's a very interesting cloud. It is the nature of light to rise. To cleave, that's how they translate vekus. I have no idea what cleaving means. You can look it up in the dictionary, but that's how they translate the word vekus. Ulikolo, and to remain included in its source. Kiyadu, as it is known, that every light wants to be in its source, and therefore, the kol hamshachas eid, any time you are drawing light down, and the key word is not only hamshacha, but gili, revealing light, which I'm going to explain to you soon. Blinetan. Gam kumayshe nimshach min hamoed, even as it radiates from the source, it's a phenomenon of revelation, of hahelam, of this that was hidden, which is the phenomenon of cause and effect, and then cause and effect will be il of yol in every case of cause and effect. Teva ha'olol, the nature of the effect is that it knows where it comes from, but moreover, the hidavik be'ilasei, everything wants to remain attached to its source. It's much easier to be a Talmud than to become a Rav. It's much nicer to be around your mother's apron and to become a self-contained, independent grown-up. The nature of everything is that it wants to be attached to its source. Light should therefore not shine, because the shining of light is the opposite, the diametrical opposite, of the attachedness of light to its source. Okay? And if you go ilav allu be'eras alze, in cause and effect, there's a relatedness between the source and what is manifest. Vimkeinu allu margesh esilasi, it knows its source, ulazeis, and therefore, if you leave it up to the light, chafet umishtekek lihidavet be'ilasi, it wants to remain attached to its source. V'leili hisrachet mimen, not to distance itself from it, v'leili lamatacholet, to descend below. Yeah? Now turn to page Zion, which is for the same page. Okay. I'm skipping a bunch of lines. 2, 4, 6, 8. 8 lines, top of page Zion. Umikomakim, nevertheless. You see it? Yes? Umikomakim, nevertheless. Hari hanefesh yered v'nimshach l'hachis as a guf. The neshama does descend. And the explanation is, omnam shizel b'derech hechrech. It's actually a force. It's superimposed. Shizel hepech tivi. It's contrary to the nature of light. Light really does not want to shine. The neshama does not want to calm down. Why does it calm down? The body forces it. And the same is true in the analogy, in the mashal of Oiris and Kelim. Oiris don't want to shine. The Keli forces it to shine, because the nature of light is to be attached to its source. Okay, now, before I speak, does anybody want to say anything on this? Any questions or comments about this whole philosophy, this whole Indian that the Rebbe is discussing here in this moment? The simple answer to the question is, the body is not forcing the neshama. The body is suggesting something to the neshama that makes the neshama decide, I want to make this commitment. I want to sacrifice what's in my best interest for the greater advantage that can only be gained if I go into the body. The neshama chooses to defy itself and its own nature and descend into the body because of the milas that can only be gained once it comes into the body. Let me begin this discussion with the following points. Number one, nobody could say about Hashem that he has to. There's no such thing by God that he needs to do anything. The concept of a nature in the Eibishter's world is a categorical misnomer. Hashem can do anything he wants, in any way he wants. There's absolutely no limitations. And when we say that, what we mean to say is Hashem is not even bound by the limitations of our imagination. Hashem can do things that we can't even fathom, right? Like the lashon that's found in Sodom is that there's actually spheres ein kates, there's an infinite number of spheres. We are confined to eser spheres, and we have absolutely no ability to conceive, to even imagine of anything more than 10 spheres. So the infinity of Hashem exceeds even our imagination, our power of dimion, of farshtel, of just imagining things. Hashem has absolutely no limitations. And therefore, you can never say about Hashem he has to. There's no such thing. Has to with a limit, has to with a form, has to with a nature. We have to, right? We have to walk on the ground. We can't fly. We don't have wings, right? And even if we get into an airplane and we fly, the airplane has its limitations. Those are rules of an existence that was created. There is no such thing by the Eibishter as a limitation. So you cannot say about him, he had to do it this way. What you can say about him is, he chose to do it this way. He could have done it. Hashem could have made the world in 1,000 different ways, and a lot more than 1,000 different ways. He chose to make the world this way. Why? It's a long story. It's a very long story. Right? One of the more useful answers, from an avoided perspective for sure, is he made the world by creating first a blueprint. And the blueprint is the Torah. The blueprint of the creation. And Torah has limits. Torah is Chachmas Eishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the wisdom of God. And as such, it has limits. The limits of Torah are actually pretty broad. And I said, and therefore what it means that Torah is limited is rather complicated. But nonetheless, the world conforms to the limitations of Torah. So then you're going to say, well, why was the Torah limited the way it was limited? Then you've really just transferred the question. In the final analysis, you cannot ask why. This is what he chose. And he could have chosen something different just as well. And the issue is not why, the issue is what. Once we understand the idea that we cannot understand Hashem, we understand that we cannot ask why. Having said that, in other words, once we make it very, very plain and very clear that we're not trying to explain God. We're not trying to say why the Abishu did what he did, because there's no such thing as why. There's no answer to that question. Let us address the what. What did the Abishu do? And here goes. The Abishu chose, as far as this morning's discussion is concerned, and I remember having this discussion with you at the beginning of last year also, to create the world with two basic tools. Okay, what's the Hebrew word for tool, anybody? Koyach. Koyach is one of the Hebrew words for tool. The Abishu chose to create the world with two tools. He could have made it with one, could have made it with three. In fact, according to the Kisvi Arizal, it's implicit that he didn't make it with three. But we're going to maintain he created the world with two tools. He could have made it with four, could have made it with 17. He chose to make it with two. Why? I don't know why. And I cannot know why. Knowing why the Abishu chose to do is the same thing as knowing what God is. Or understanding the Abishu. Just as it's impossible to understand him, it's impossible to understand his original motivations. These two tools, Rabbi Isai, are called Koyach HaGvul and Koyach HaBli Gvul. The power of the Abishu to limit and the power of the Abishu to manifest infinitely. Okay? Now, we can speak of them on various levels. Okay? And if you have a pen, write. And it's the same thing I told you last year. On the highest level, these two tools would be called by the following names. Yecholtei Lahoir. The Abishu is Yecholus. His ability to radiate light would be the Koyach HaBli Gvul. And then you would have Yecholtei Shaloi Lahoir, which would be the Shedesh of the Koyach HaGvul. That's set number one. Number two, the same thing as it manifests in Lifnei HaTzimtzum would be called Koyach HaGvul and Koyach HaBli Gvul. Koyach HaBli Gvul naturally would be the same thing as the infinite manifestation of Hashem. And Koyach HaGvul would be the potential for the manifestation of the limiting aspect of the Abishu. So that's already two, right? That's two. If you would take it to the next level, you would speak about Kav and the Rishimu. The Kav would be the basis for the Bli Gvul of the Abishu. The Rishimu would be the basis for the Gvul of the Abishu. But now you're talking already Achar HaTzimtzum, okay? And of course, finally, you would have Oiris and Kelim, the light and vessels. So I've given you four names that really are four realms, four worlds, four levels for these two tools. Yecholtei Lahoir, Yecholtei Shaloi Lahoir, Koyach HaGvul, Koyach HaBli Gvul, Kav and Rishimu, and Eidus and Kelim. Okay, and in each one of these four sets, you've got one that represents Bli Gvul and one that represents Gvul.
Now,
Koyach HaGvul and Koyach HaBli Gvul. The third would be Kav and Rishimu, and the fourth would be Eidus and Kelim. Now, having said that, there are some very interesting distinctions between these two faculties. And one of them is, one is called the Koyach Galoi, and the other is called the Koyach Ne'elam. One is called the revealed strength, and the other one is called the hidden strength. Okay, or alternatively, I should really use this word better. One is called the Koyach Galoi, and the other one is called the Koyach Nivdal. Ne'elam and Nivdal, hidden and separate, apart. Koyach Galoi and Koyach Ne'elam and Nivdal. What are the distinction between these two Koyaches? It's very simple. Koyach Galoi means it reveals. Yeah. What is the first thing about revelation? When something reveals, the first thing that it reveals is where it comes from. A Koyach Galoi, a revealed strength, reveals not only what it is, but what it's connected to, its source. And when a Koyach Galoi, for example, if infinite light of Hashem would be revealed in this room, right? And you know what the definition of revealed in this room is. Anybody know the definition of the infinite light of Hashem being revealed in this room? That would be what would happen, but what's the experience? That we would feel it, right? It's very important. Gilui means that the Makabal gets it. Gilui is not about Mashpia. Gilui is about Makabal, which is why Gilui is associated with Tzimtzum, as I'm going to explain soon. When the light of Hashem shines through, what happens? We become part of the light of Hashem. And by association, we become part of what the light of Hashem is a part of. In other words, one of the fundamental qualities of Koyach Gilui is to unify. When the light shines, it makes many things one. That's what the effect of light is. When the light shines into a vessel, when the light reveals itself, the whole function of Gilui is attachedness. Dveikus, and for those of you who like philosophy, and I hope you do, it's called Dveikus Nikeres. A Dveikus, an attachedness that's niket, that you can see. Gilui means it is attached to its source, and whatever it touches, it will further attach to its source. Okay, so the criteria for Oir, and for Kav, and for Koyach HaBli Gvul, and for Yecholtei Lahoir is that it shines. But by the virtue of shining, it, number one, is united, and number two, whatever it touches, it unites with itself and indirectly with its source. Okay? You need a physical metaphor, give a very simple physical metaphor. You're burning wood in a campfire, right? How many logs do you have? I don't know, 100 logs, 200 logs, 1,000 logs. Yeah, you get many, many pieces of charcoal or real coal. It doesn't make a difference. How many flames do you have? You have one. That's the nature of flames. When you put a bunch of wood into a fire and you burn them, the wood does not become one. On the contrary, the act of fire vis-a-vis the wood is to make it into more parts. Like you threw in 10 logs, when you've done, you've got 10,000 pieces of ash. But that's it as much as the fuel is concerned. The nature of a flame is that it is one and it oneifies. Okay, if you've got two fires, right, and they meet, they may become bigger, they may occupy more space, but the nature of flames is that they are one. Because that's the whole quality of oyer. It is one with its source, and therefore also one with every other flame. And its function is to make everything one. That's the rule of a koyach galui. A koyach ne'alam has the exact opposite rule in every respect. Number one, a koyach ne'alam by definition doesn't tell you where it comes from. When you look at a koyach ne'alam, you don't know its source. And just to maintain uniformity of language, how would you say it in the fancy language of philosophy? You would use these words, Dveikus Bilti Nikeres. Even when a keli is dover, kelim of Atilas Rolakus, Dveikus, it's attached, Bilti Nikeres. You cannot see, you don't see its attachedness. It's not revealed to a bystander, to somebody outside, the Dveikus. Dveikus Bilti Nikeres, the nature of keli. The nature of koyach hagavul, which is the same thing as koyach ne'alam, which is the same thing as koyach nivdal, is that it's separated. Number one, it's separated from its source. And number two, it's separated from everything else like itself. And again, for example, coals. You have a big fire, you're dumping a bunch of coals, the coals are glowing hot, they're right, api alocha, each one of those coals has a din of a piece of flame. Right, a pitera and a pichsidus for sure. When a coal is red hot, that coal is not a stone that's burning. It's a chatichas eish, it's a piece of fire. But if you put two coals next to one another, they remain two. They're never going to become one. Because the nature of a koyach nivdal and a koyach ne'alam is, number one, it's separate from its source. And number two, anybody? It's separate from everything else that's like itself. So these are two building blocks of creation, so to speak. The nature of Koyach HaGilui is, the nature of Koyach HaGilui is that it always reflects its source and is attached to its source. When it counters another inyan of Gilui, they become one. I'll give you an example, okay? You went to school, yeah, in the first grade, some of you did, yeah? And you learned that 1 + 1 = 2. Yeah, 1 + 1 = 2 is a concept that for some people is something that they have to think about, yeah? 2 - 1 = 1. Right? Are those two concepts, or are they one concept? Now, in the first grade, or in kindergarten, or in fifth grade, depending on how intelligent you are, those are two distinct concepts. 1 + 1 = 2 is a concept. 2 - 1 = 1 is a separate concept, or 6 × 6 = 36, and 36 / 6 = 6. In the second grade, or the third grade, those are two distinct concepts. Eventually, you get smart enough to discover that they're inverse systems. It's exactly the same thing. It's just going forward and going backwards. For the same reason that 1 and 1 is 2, 2 minus 1 is 1. For the same reason that 6 times 6 is 36, 36 divided by 6 is 6, right? That may be surprising some of you. But they're exactly the same concept. And as you get older, what happens? The concepts merge. You get smarter, yeah? You get smarter, and you start realizing that they're no longer separate concepts. So in your mind, the same exact chokh that justifies 1 and 1 is 2 justifies 2 minus 1 is 1. So the concept, the inyonim, become unified. What about the very words that articulate, that say these concepts? The words remain words. Words don't merge. You cannot take two words and squeeze them together and make them into one. You can't do it. Huh? Good point. But it's the concept, it's not the words, not the letters. Do not and don't are one because of the inyan shevadava, not because of the mitzvah shevadava. Okay, it's a good vikuach. That's one of the reasons you're going to have later on this hemshach on Tanariches. And when we get to it, we're going to be repeating this, and then we're going to really delve into it. There's a very interesting concept in Chassidus. The concept is Hanefesh Meleya Oisis. Someplace at the very, very core of our existence is a storage called Oisis. In that storage called Oisis, there is actually Bepoyo Mamish Bligvul Oisis. There is an infinite number of words packed someplace, it's higher than Tainu, in the very essence of the Neshama. And there's a separate resource of Oisis, Amachshava, and a separate resource of Oisis, Adibur. Why? Because Oisis do not regenerate. Oisis don't have kids. Stones don't have babies. There's no such thing. Two stones is two, one stone is one, and they're not going to have kids. There's no such thing. They don't reproduce. It's an inyan, right? If you didn't have this law that Chassidus talks about, of HaNefesh Melei Oisis, you would run out of words. The reason you don't run out of words is because there's literally, Bepel Mamish, a Bligvul Oisis and Nefesh. You know why? Because Oisis don't merge, and Oisis don't part. Oisis are like stones. What you have is you have. You don't have any more, you don't have any less. There's no, absolutely no change in Oisis. When you put two red hot coals next to one another, they're going to remain one, two. They're never going to merge. Ideas are very different than words. Why? Because the smarter you get, what happens if you get smarter? If you learn more? You see the greater unity in ideas. You start to notice. Shmuel. As you get smarter, what happens? What happens? Two ideas become one. 10 ideas become one. The smarter you get, the more you see the unity in ideas. I heard from a friend of mine. I didn't hear it from that, but I heard from a friend of mine that he heard that the Rebbe said once. Maybe the Rebbe didn't say it, but that the Rogatchover said, maybe the Rebbe said it, that he knows that the whole Torah is Nekuda Achas, is one point. But to him, right now, he sees that the whole Torah is 10 points. And if he'd be even smarter, he would discover how the Torah is 1 point. Let me ask you a question. How many points is the Torah? From our, it's thousands of points. Because from our vantage point, on our level, there's so many ideas, right? Shvuah and Nedarim. Remember Shvuah and Nedarim? You can climb the walls. Shvuah and Nedarim. Tzvei Velten. It's mamish, almost the same thing. And the halachas that separate Shvuah and Nedarim can drive you bananas. Right? The shiur I gave you Thursday night last week, I mentioned to you. Hafaras Nedarim and Hataras Nedarim. Tzvei Velten. Then. How many ideas are there in Teda? Come on. The Rav Chaim says he sees the whole Teda as 10 Nekudas. Why? Because when you're as smart as he is, and you know as much as he is, and you understand it as well as he is, you see the unity in Torah. And then he goes on to say, if I was even smarter, I would say, oh, it's not 10 ideas, God, it's 1 idea. So this is what happens to ideas. The smarter, the more you appreciate ideas, the more many becomes one. Not words. Words never ever change. You can sometimes do without words. You can say, I'm so smart, I don't have to say this in 1,000 words, I can say it in 15 words. That's possible. But words don't merge. There's no such thing as unification of words. Words are dead, and they remain dead, they remain apart. This is the rule of Koyach Galui and Koyach Ne'alam V'Nivdal. Ideas will merge, the words will never merge. Okay? The necessity for the words may merge. We don't need the words, but the words themselves are lifeless, independent, self-contained entities, and will forever remain that way. This is the difference between a Koyach Ne'alam and a Koyach Galui. Okay, now I want to summarize and I want to repeat myself. Koyach Galui was designed by the Eibishter to unify. Okay? Chesed is an analogy for Koyach Galui, to unify. It is attached to its source. It's attached to every other light it encounters. And the whole idea of it is to make everything one. Koyach Ne'alam is devised for the specific purpose of separation. Separate from the source and therefore separate from every other entity. Okay? Now, let's talk business. Let's talk tachlis. This is what we call guf and neshama. What's the neshama? Neshama is life. Right, what do you know about life? First of all, life is one. Second of all, you know life maintains its life by attachedness to its source. You may have come across this concept in Chassidus. Why is there a heartbeat? 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2? Because the neshama is running back and forth. What's it running to? It's running to its own source. The credibility, the life of life, is attachedness to its source. You cut off life from its source, it dies. Because the nature of life is, it has to be attached to its source in a revealed way. The body, by definition, is death. You give life to the body, but what's the body attached to? What's the body? The body is attached to nothing else. That's the nature of guf. And the same is true in Eiris and Kalim. There are 10 Kalim, yeah? Those 10 Kalim are never going to become 9. They're never going to become 11. They're forever going to be 10. Because they were devised by the Eibishter to be Nivdal. Nivdal means separate from its source, separate from everything else. Now, just to make things interesting a little bit, not all lifeless things are the same. For example, there's a red-hot coal, there's a diamond, and there's a common rock. They all have the same basic characteristic, right? You put two red-hot coals next to one another, they remain two. You put two diamonds next to one another, they remain two. And you put two common stones next to one another, they also remain two. But one would be a marshal for Kelim of Atzilis. The red-hot coals is Kelim of Atzilis. The Kelim are Lakus. But it's not the Lakus because they're attached in a revealed way. The coal is burning. When you're looking at it, you don't see that it's attached to anything outside of itself. And the Kelim of Asir would be a common rock. A diamond, I don't know which realm it would be. Maybe it would be higher than Atzilis God. But okay, the point is that there's different levels of stones, different levels of Koyach Nivdol, of separated entities. But the tzad hashove shebehem, the constant is, two remains two. You cannot make two one. Now, let's get philosophical a moment. In the realm of koyach nivdal, right, you've been with us all from the beginning, there are two basic systems in creation. One is gila, revelation. The function of revelation is first and foremost unity. Unity with the source and unity with everything else. Koyach ne'alam is exactly the opposite. Disparateness, separateness. It's separate from its source and it's separate from everything else. Okay, that's the basis for Eidus and Kalim. Now here's what we have to use some thought. Who created Kayach Goli? Anybody? Who? Who created Kayach Goli? The Eibishter. Who created Kayach Nivdal? Also the Eibishter. Okay, now just think for half a second. In your opinion, but I want you to do me a favor and think. I'm going to use words which are totally kfida, but I'm going to use them anyway. Which is more difficult for the Eibishter to be? And I'll explain. There's no such thing as difficult by the Eibishter. Right? Absolutely nothing is difficult. Why? As I told you in my beginning, we don't know what he is, we don't understand his motivations, we can't appreciate how he functions, naturally. But nevertheless, from a perspective of Egoyim, a perspective of Seichel, in other words, once we're trying to understand the Eibishter, which is a more natural function, so to speak, and which is a more Chiddushlika function, a more unnatural function. And I'm going to give you a hint. We have a very dumb hint. The Eibishter is one. No?
Separates. Making it separate. Because God is one,
that you make sure. Again, the word difficult is a wrong use of a word. You can't say by the Eibishter difficult. The correct wording should be Chiddush, so to speak. Counterintuitive, not what you would think would happen. Hepach, the Salka Daita Chamina, it's contrary to what you would think initially. But the Eibishter is one. His inyan is unity. Therefore, when light comes forth from him, it's also going to be one. Something which comes from him, and he is one, is also going to be one. But there's another quality about the Eibishter. And that is that he's separate. Separate from what? Huh? Nobody made him. Right? You and I are dependent on a lot of people, right? For example, you are dependent on the chair you're sitting on, because the chair you're sitting on just returned to I, and what would happen? You would hurt your seat, right? You and I are dependent on the ground which is supporting the chair we're sitting on, because if the ground that we're sitting on would disappear, we'd hurt a lot more than our seat, right? We're dependent upon whoever cooked us supper last night after the fast. We're dependent upon 1,000 entities. Ultimately, we're dependent upon the Eibishter. The Eibishter is independent. So there is the concept of Havdalah by the Eibishter. But the concept of Havdalah by the Eibishter is the very essence of the Eibishter. The truth of Hashem is that He is independent. Right? So Chassidus makes the following assertion. In Yonim, that come from the Eibishter in a way that they are one with the Eibishter, are called Ha'ara. They're a reflection of the Eibishter. They're only the light of the Eibishter. In Yonim, that come from the Eibishter in a way that they're separate from the Eibishter, have within them the very essence of the Eibishter. In other words, Oyer, light, comes from Hashem. Koyach Goli comes from Hashem. Kelim, Koyach Nivdal, comes from Hashem. They're both true, yes. But Oyer, since it's attached to the Eibishter, is a more logical gili from the Eibishter. It comes from the union of the Eibishter that unites, that's one. The idea that the Eibishter creates something which is separate from him comes from the idea that the Eibishter is separate, which is the essence of the Eibishter, the truth of the Eibishter. So Koyach Goloi, a revealed power of the Eibishter, so to speak, comes from a lower level in a Lakus than the Koyach Nelam v'Nivdam. Things that are revealed, that are attached to Hashem in a revealed way, come from, so to speak, a lower level in the Eibishter Koyachol than things that come from the Eibishter in a way that they're separate from the Eibishter. Why? Because for something to be separate from the Eibishter, it has to draw, has to be Yoinik, has to be Yoirish, from the Inyan that the Eibishter is separate. That's the very essence of the Eibishter. On the other hand, those things that come from the Eibishter in a way that are revealed to the Eibishter are attached to the Eibishter. And therefore, it's so to speak, again, I'm using this word advisedly, I don't mean it, it's so to speak easier for something to come out of Hashem and be attached to Hashem than for something to come out of the Eibishter and be separate from Hashem. That comes from the inyan of the Eibishter is separate, from the atzmos of the Eibishter. No, that's right. Harder is not the right word. You're right. The word hard and easy is incorrect. It's more of a, it's coming from a deeper point, so to speak, from a higher place. Okay? These are the rules of Koyach Goloi and Koyach Nelam. Koyach Goloi is attached to Hashem in a more revealed way. Koyach Atzma, Koyach Nelam, Koyach Nidol has the Etzma of the Eibishter inside of himself. So if I would ask you the dumb question, who is closer to God, your Neshama or your Guf? Or who is closer to God, Eidus and Caleb? Or who is closer to God, Kavan and Shibu? Who is closer to Eibishter, Kech HaGul, Kech HaBligul? What's closer to the Eibishter? This is where it gets really messy. You would have to say, it depends, put your yarmulke on. The Fum Sidus Nefesh on yarmulke. What will be the answer? If you're talking about what you can see, light is visibly more attached to Hashem than a vessel. The Neshama is attached to the Eibishter, and the Guf is not attached to the Eibishter. It says in Tanya, the goof of a yid is the same as the goof of a goy. The neshama is radically different. But if you're talking about the truth, the etzem of the Eibish that is found in the goof, the etzem of the Eibish that is found in the kelim, the etzem of the Eibish is found in the Rishimu, and the etzem of the Eibish is found in the kelim chagvor. Why? Because they're separate from Hashem. To be separate from Hashem, they have to be touching a point in the Eibish that where the Eibish that is separate, which is the very truth of the Eibish. While if you're attached to the Eibish, that's the natural thing. Everything is attached to the Eibish. And as a result of this, you have this well-known cloud that you constantly encounter in Hasidus. That the Guf is a higher Sheresh than the Neshama, that the Keli is a higher Sheresh than the Yair, that the Rishima is a higher Sheresh than the Kav, and that the Kech HaGul is a higher Sheresh than the Kech HaBligvul. And in some really strange way, the Yecholte Shalei Lohayr is deeper in Atzmos than Yecholte Lohayr. Shannon, are you able to follow, or this is too much? It's not so complicated. Pretty straightforward. Levitzad al Mishlafnish to come and help and come. El Shlafnish. If I stay, just be that, but I had notes. Okay. Anybody have any questions? A yesh has to have the yesh amiti. Very simple, right?
But we said we're not yesh.
Well, when we say yesh, we don't mean ourselves personally, we mean the Gashmi's the creation. And the nature of the Gashmi's creation is that it denies the ayin. Right? That's the whole magic of Yeshua. It's the whole taitch of Yeshua. Okay, but we'll get to that later in the year. What does that mean, Yechanel is Yischachus? I didn't say Yischachus. It's a greater Chiddush. Yischachus is a whole different sugya. It's a greater Chiddush. Yes, it is a greater Chiddush. Be'ischachus. No. Be'ischachus means that it has to be renewed every second, which is also true. Light has to be renewed every second. That's a weiter different concept. Weiter. Chiddush and Ischachus is entirely different. They're apples and oranges. But we're talking about two different subjects. So yes. We'll get to the Eidus, El Kuspis Chachas, and El Muslim Chitas, or vice versa. Another time, maybe. It's a different sugal together. Okay. Let me add one more component to this, okay? Are you familiar with the concept of Moir? What does Moir mean? Translate the word Moir. No, Moir does not mean a night. Who? Okay, so don't get nervous. If you'll slow down, you'll speed it up. Translate the word Moir. Translate the word. Huh? Moir, no, that's Me'oir. Moir means the source, a luminary. The sun is a Moir. Yes, a Chumash. Shnei ha-Me'oirois ha-Gedeilam. The single for Moir is Moir. Okay? The Eibishter, in his relationship to the world, functions as a Moir, as a source for light. When you add this detail to this discussion, it becomes much, much clearer. Hashem's relationship to the world is that he's a source for light. Okay? So now, that light shines from him. Makes sense or not? Why? Because he's a source for light. What about that vessels come from him? That something should come from him that should not be attached to him? It's a chiddush. Because it's a chiddush, it has to come from a deeper point within him. Repeat that again?
Separated.
No. It's contrary to the rule of Moir. The rule of Moir is that everything that comes from it has to be attached. It comes from it and it comes separate. So it's got to come from a point within this system that allows for something not to be as Oir should be as it comes from Moir. You understand? Now, I've exhausted the clock. I just want to share this concept with you briefly, and I may spend the next year, which is the last year in this moment, discussing this concept. One of the most unusual things that you find in Hasidus, and from my experience, Bachem are not even aware of this, is, and I've had this discussion with you last year also, it's one of the subjects that I like to teach every year, and that is that when light comes from a source, it is dark. When light comes from a source, it is dark. You know why it's dark? Because the nature of light is to be attached to its source. In order for light to shine, there has to be a separate act of forcing the light to shine. And you know how you force light to shine? How do you force light to shine? Huh? How do you force light to shine? You flip the switch. I said, you know the concept. You force light to shine by separating it, by being mitzamtzem. As long as light knows its source, it's going to be black like the source. When light comes out of its source, it's black. You're going to do something that, you're going to manipulate that light to take away its dveikus from the earth. And when you take away the dveikus from the earth will become what's called in Hasidus, oir ha-meir, a light that shines. And okay, I sort of made my decision. This is what I'm going to talk to you about the next year. I want to talk to you about the whole concept of Oyer. And the emes is that when Oyer shines, it's Helam, like the source is Helam. And there are several tzimtzumim, not just Keli. There's a tzimtzum prior to Keli that affects that the light should be Oyer Amed, that the light should shine. Because even shining light is an element of separateness from the source. And light wants to be attached to its source. Okay, now let me summarize and conclude today's class. The summary of what we learned this morning is that the Eibishter declared the world with two basic building blocks, and they are distinct, separate from one another. Number one, Koyach Golem, the revealed power of the Eibishter. The revealed power of the Eibishter is one with him and one with everything else. Whatever it touches, it unifies. The other is Koyach Nelam, or Koyach Nivdal. It's separate from the Eibishter, and it's separate from every other Koyach Nivdal. The irony is, the twist is, that Koyach Nivdal is separate from the Eibishter, and it's Mushir Shenatzmus in a point which is even higher than the Koyach Golem. So why does the Neshama come into the Guf? Why does the light shine into the Keli? Why? Because the Neshama feels that the Guf has a high Shadish. The light feels that the Keli has a higher Shadish. Because of the higher Shadish of the Guf, the Neshama says, I want to go into that body because of its earlier origin. The Oyer feels the Keli is higher Shadish, and therefore the Oyer wants to go into the Keli. Even though the Pashtus, the Teva, light doesn't want to shine, light wants to be attached to its source. The Neshama doesn't want to come into the Guf, it wants to remain one with the Eibishter. And therefore you have this irony, this contradiction called Balkocha Tachai, Balkocha Tameis. Hashem made two powers, and they bounce off one another. The koyach ne'alam is separate from the Eibishter. And it appears to the koyach golus is shining into me. What's going to happen to the koyach golus when it's going to shine into the keli? It's going to have to become separate, at least to some extent. So the oyer is drawn in two directions. The oyer mitzad itself wants to remain attached to the Eibishter. The oyer mitzad the awareness of the shodesh kolam of the kelim wants to go into the keli. And the same is true of the neshama. The neshama by itself doesn't want to come into all this. It wants to remain one. That's the nature of light. It wants to remain one. By the virtue of it coming into the guf is forcing it. The neshama sees the guf. And it sees that the shedesh of the guf is higher than the shedesh of the neshama. And the neshama is torn. On the one hand, it wants to remain one. That's the nature of light. On the other hand, it wants to go into the body, which is separate because of the shedesh kadam of the guf to the neshama. Any questions?